Okay, here's another scary Trump thing going on. President Trump, quote unquote, President Trump, has just instructed his entire staff, everybody that works with him and his cabinet, etc., to shut up. Do not give any information to the news media. He's accused, well, not accused, but he believes that there are leaks going from the White House into the news media because his people may be calling the news people, giving them tips. So Sean Spicer, who works with Trump, has demanded to see all the cell phones reportedly to make sure that no phone calls are being made to the news media in order to tell them what's going on in the White House administration. This has, see, it, that's not fake news. That's somebody in the White House leaking to the press things that are actually going on. So this is what the bottom line is. Can you read into this? Your president is instructing his people not to let the press know what they're doing, which means the people are not to know what they're doing in the White House. Oh my God, does that make you comfortable? Sure, why not, huh? Right, yeah, what the hell?
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah, they've gotten a bit weird, all right.
Whatever.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. You ready for this?
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you so much, Julie. Welcome to the program. Yeah, I mean, every once in a while, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because I know you're here for different reasons, but every once in a while, I think someone has got to sit down and in layman's terms, just like look at reality and what's actually going on. Now, if you voted for Donald, what's his last name, Trump, then this is going to go in one ear and out the other because there's nothing in between your ears, quite obviously. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I love you. No, this isn't going to affect you because you're going to stand next to the guy, whether he shoots somebody in Manhattan or not, you'll still be there. And I get that. Fine. Whatever. But this is just really, come on. Let's just take a look at what's actually going on here. Just wake up and then you can go and do what you're going to go do anyway. You got a guy who's running for president who everybody in the country knows that Russia is leaking Hillary Clinton's email. Somehow they've hacked into the system and they've been able to get her emails. A foreign government has hacked into our emails, and Hillary Clinton is one of our citizens, believe it or not, and she does live here. They've purposely hacked in. They've released them, knowing that the outcome would be that Donald Trump would become president. Hopefully, that was the idea of leaking all this stuff. Why else would Russia bother? So, because they didn't want Hillary Clinton in the White House, that's why, because she's a thorn in their side. So they manipulated the election by very carefully and very specifically releasing emails on certain days when it was appropriate, And the last release was just days before the election itself here in this country. Donald Trump actually gets up in front of the cameras before the election and encourages Russia to keep leaking the hacked emails. Most Americans, no matter what party they may be affiliated with, would probably say, I find this practice by Russia to be abysmal. I don't want Hillary Clinton to be president, Trump would say, but I do not believe that a foreign government should be involved in leaking these things. That is a wrong practice, and I do not condone it. That would be an honorable man. Instead, he stands up and he says to the American people, he addresses Russia, who probably would be watching, and says, Russia, continue to hack into the system and continue to release emails.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
That in itself bothered me greatly about how American this man is, or just how much winning is more important than denouncing the involvement of foreign government. Instead, he applauds it. He applauds Vladimir Putin for being a more effective leader than Barack Obama. He applauds Vladimir Putin for being able to lead his country without his people defying him or criticizing him. He admires that. These were red flags about one's personality that could not be denied. And now there are investigations, hopefully, into the involvement that Donald Trump or any of the people working with him, and there were many who actually met with Russian diplomats and officials during the campaign itself as Russia is hacking into the system. The Russian diplomat to the United States has had numerous conversations with Trump and Trump's people. They say that's in order to keep relations with Russia effectively friendly. But this ambassador is also a top Russian spy as defined and admitted. It was Judge Judy, I believe, who very accurately said and wrote a book with this title, Don't Pee on My Leg and Tell Me It's Raining. That kind of sums it up. I didn't think Judge Judy would be a soothsayer, but that's what this is about. And whether you're a Trump supporter or not, you should be concerned. As I said at the top of the show, Donald Trump does not want to discuss any of this. He wants all of his people in the White House and everybody that works with him to keep their mouths shut. Don't tell the American people, don't tell the press anything until we release them in statements. He's afraid that those leaks would be fake news when he himself dispenses fake news every day of the week. He's running paranoid because he knows that there are things to hide, and should they leak, he's in a lot of trouble. That much he may know. It's a scary situation in that sense. They're working on Obamacare right now to try to figure out how to deal with that. As they work on it, rather than the president, this Trump guy, talking to the American people and saying, what do you need? What do you want? Let's sit down with Democrats. Let's sit down with Republicans and come up with a plan that's great for everybody. Rather than do that, rather than work with the people and work with the Congress to come up with something that's good for everybody, his people decide to craft this themselves. They won't tell anybody how far it's coming along, what it's about. As a matter of fact, they are terming this project as secretive. This is something for the American people that the American people should have a hand in, and yet it's secretive. What this man is doing is he's making his administration off limits to the American public. And he's virtually saying, I will tell you things when I want to tell you. I will tell you things that you should know and things that you shouldn't know you will not know. I will decide how things are done. You voted me into office. I shall do them all myself without your input, without your knowledge, until I am ready to spring it on you. I'm not angry. I'm concerned because not much of anything that's going on here is saying anything about democracy. And that concerns me. As a matter of fact, I was very critical of the last President Bush. Now I'm seeing in retrospect, I would love to have him back tomorrow. He was a respectful man, a nice man. I didn't agree with a lot of stuff that he did, that's for sure. But I suppose at this point, I'm seeing the difference between the two personalities, and I'm longing for my Bush. You know what I mean? Yes, if only.
Yes, of course you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on, isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
I'll give you an example here of what I'm talking about. I had to go to the airport yesterday to do an airport pickup. I don't drive a limousine. I was picking up a person very near and dear to me. And I hate going to the airport because you have to sit in traffic, and I don't like doing that. It's a waste of my time, but it is time in the car alone with myself. So anyway, I get to the airport, and I'm there a little bit early. So I go to the I'm at Terminal B there at Logan International Airport, in case you want to find me yesterday. And I'm at the legal seafood bar because I figure when you want to waste time, have a drink. So I did, and I'm sitting there, and I'm looking across the bar, and I'm seeing this lady. She's I wouldn't say very attractive. She's just a lady. And she's sitting at the other end of the bar facing me, and she's eating a sandwich. I don't know what the sandwich was. It doesn't matter. And she takes a bite of this sandwich, a large bite. It's not a dainty bite. It's like half the sandwich is in her mouth. And then she begins to chew it. I had never seen anybody chew like this before. I was fascinated, and I hope she didn't notice that I was staring at her as she chewed. All the food in her mouth went into her left cheek. Her right cheek is just sitting there doing nothing. It ain't chewing. It's not digesting. It's not participating in the eating process. Half a sandwich is wedged into her left cheek. And she's trying to chew. The action of most of the food being in one cheek, whenever she chewed, that this bulge of food would go up and down from the tip of her nose down to her chin. You would watch this bulbous skin protrusion of food inside of her mouth hopping up, hopping down, hopping up. I've never seen anybody chew like this. It looked like she was doing cheek exercises. And her mouth, when she chewed, because there was so much fucking food in there, her mouth would open a little bit. So you'd see the churning process, like she was making butter, you know, like there's a churning going on inside. It was the most disgusting display of eating I have really ever seen in my life. And then my eyes shifted a little bit to the side where her boyfriend was sitting. Again, he was not a particularly attractive man. He wasn't an ugly man. He just was a person. And he was sitting next to her, and he was eating his sandwich really properly, just chewing. You know, you wouldn't see any real mouth movement going on when he's eating. But she is just like, it's like a circus in her mouth, man. It's just her face becomes disfigured on one side as she chews. And the chewing process goes on continually because as soon as she finished chewing that stuff and swallowed it, she'd be in there again for another chew. So it was a constant churning going on. And I'm thinking, wow, this is absolutely disgusting. Now, I know that she, I assume that she's a very, very nice person. She's probably a librarian, or maybe she's saved people from burning cars. I don't know her. She could be the sweetest person on earth. But her eating process sucks the big one if you're facing her. I can't imagine her boyfriend sitting across from her in a restaurant or in a dinner table. I'd puke in my pants if I were sitting with this thing in this chewing process. Apparently he doesn't care about that. Apparently I do. But the point here is that she's probably a very, very nice, wonderful person. But her chewing process sucked. Well, that's how I feel about Trump. But the other way around. Trump's probably a horrible man. He's probably very friendly. Business people are very friendly. How are you? Good to meet you. Very, very nice. You look very, very nice. It's all bullshit. They're only out to achieve what their goal is. That's all. And if they're being nice, it's not them. It's the business talking, or it could be. It's not that I'm opposed to what Donald Trump wants to do with the country. It's not that I'm opposed to his wall, his healthcare system, his view of things, his foreign policies, his stupid manipulation I'm not concerned about those things, although I am concerned, but that's not the point. I've lived through presidents before whom I totally did not agree with. What I don't like about this whole situation is the way that he goes about it. The secrecy, the anger, the disdain, the conniving, the turning of facts, the manipulation, the gigantic bulbous ego. I loathe all of that. I don't like people like that. So it's not the journey, it's the bus that you're on to get there. And that's what I dislike about the man. Politically, I disagree with him, but that's okay. I get that. I live in a country where some people think this way and some people think that way. I get all of that. I get it. It's the character of the man. It's the way he does things. It's the way he fat shames, wants to grab women's pussies because he can. It's all that stuff. It's the lying, it's the deceiving, it's all that stuff. It's the need to be loved, it's the lashing out and anger. And people may say, Ron, you seem pretty angry about this too. Well, I don't want to be a child about it, but I didn't start it. My president tells me that to be angry, to lash out at people, to shame them down, is the way that it should be done. That's what he told me. That's what he tells you. So here we go. Let's dance. Let's get it on. Let's do this. Come on. Let's go.
Please be quiet. 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 Please be quiet.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Gray skies are gonna clear up, put on a happy face. Brush off the clouds and cheer up, put on a happy face. Take off the gloomy mask of tragedy, it's not your style. You look so good that you'll be glad you decided to smile. Pick out a pleasant outlook, stick out that noble chin. Wipe off that full of doubt look, slap on a happy grin. And spread sunshine all over the place. Just put on a happy face.
Hey, it's the Ron Van Dam Show. Thank you for joining me. I do this every single freaking weekday. How are you? Good to see you. Yeah, Mr. Coltrane is helping me out in the background there. You can hear us on NewEnglandBroadcasting.com, RonVanDam.com, and then all over the place on iTunes and TuneIn Radio and Podcast One and old Podbean Network and all these places to see us do this stuff. And we've also got a Facebook page. It's New England Broadcasting, the Ron Van Dam Show. New England Broadcasting, the Ron Van Dam Show. There's absolutely no point to going there other than the fact that I paid somebody a huge amount of money to create that page, which really was a waste of my cash. So go there anyway. Claire McIntosh is going to join us a little bit later in the show. Claire McIntosh, of course, the inventor of the Apple. Only kidding, she's not the inventor of the Apple. She's the inventor of nothing. She wrote a book called I See You. That's creepy. Actually, it's a very, it is a creepy book. It's a mystery, it's suspense, it's about a lady who constantly feels like someone's watching her, and it develops into quite an interesting novel. We will speak to the author a little bit later on in the program. It's a pretty cool book, actually. It's not so bad, really. It's actually very good. Yesterday, I had my my final session at my massage place. No, not that kind of massage. This is the one industry. I actually, the Christmas before last, I got a gift certificate to go to a to get a massage, a 1 hour massage, and it was a very, very interesting, nice gift. It's with a chain of places called Massage Envy, which is a very odd name for a place to go get a massage. I don't understand where the envy part comes in. I'm not envious of anything about that, but that's the name of it, Massage Envy, which, of course, is right down the street from Penis Envy. And I don't know what they do there, and I don't want to find out. No, there's no connection, and there's no such place as Penis Envy. Although I do know a lot of people that apparently have it. So this Massage Envy, a nice place. You go in there and you get a massage, and they do a pretty decent job. I had never really had full body 1 hour massages before. I've had back massages, but not the whole deal where you take everything off but your underpants and you lie on a table. I'd never had that. I don't mind being touched, although usually that's by people that I know. but this is a massage. And it's an interesting industry because there, when one says, I went for a massage, some people say to themselves, oh, okay, they rubbed your back and your neck and all that kind of stuff. And it's probably very therapeutic and very enjoyable, Ron. And then there are those people, when you say, I went for a massage, they said, oh, okay. And did you tip her extra? Did they get you off? Did they, you know what I'm saying? Were the cops nearby? Was it a building that did it have a sign on it? Did you have to look over your shoulder? How did she look? Was she pretty? Did she have big tits? You know, that's the other part of it. And there have been places where you go for the massage and then extra things happen and those people get arrested and put in jail. That's not a great idea. And when you're involved with that stuff, it's also not a good idea. I'm assuming. Anyway, so this is just a regular massage place and very, very nice. Very, very nice. And the massage therapists are very, very nice people. I think they're called massage therapists. I don't know why they're therapists, but they give you a physical massage. And it's very, very nice. But this was my last one. When I went there originally and I had my little gift massage, they told me that I could do a contract that I would be charged every month and I'd be able to get an hour massage for a very low price. And it was perfectly fine. I guess I'm telling you this because I'm conflicting. I do enjoy it. I like having my body massaged. It's good. The first time I went, I had never had a full body massage before, and I was very skeptical of what was going to happen. And I remember I'm such an innocent little thing. I really, really am. I remember the massage girl. It was a girl, I'm pretty sure. And she says, remove your clothes, keep your underpants on or what's comfortable, and I'll be back in a few minutes and I'll knock first. And I thought, oh my God, this is what's going to happen. So I lay face down and I put my face in this little face ring, which is the most uncomfortable thing in the world. You're lying face down on a table and your head is hanging off of the front of the thing. And they give you this little thing attaches to it, and you put your face into it, and it looks like an ass tube. It looks like the kind of tube that you put down on a couch if you have some type of ass injury to support your ass. You know, it's like a face ring or an ass ring or something. So and I assume it's for faces. I hope no one's put their ass in there. It's the most uncomfortable thing in the world, and you get a real good view of the floor is what pretty much. What that whole thing is about. If you own a massage therapy place, make sure your floor is nice and clean because your customers are just staring at the floor. That's all. They've got a full view of the floor. So make sure it's nice and pretty. So she comes in, she starts rubbing my back, and I'm figuring, well, this is very, very comfortable. And then all of a sudden, she seems to find a little space in my back where there might be a little, what they call a knot. It's like somebody came in overnight and tied a knot in my back or something. And it didn't hurt until she touched it. And I didn't want to seem like a baby and go, no, that hurt. Well, stomp it, that hurt. I wanted to seem like a man because I'm a man. And I figured this is going to be good for me. And she starts working on it. She starts kneading my back like I'm a piece of dough or something. Like she's going to make a pizza out of my body. And she starts kneading it, and she says, "I'm going to make the knot go away." And I said, "That's a double negative. What does that mean?" She said, "No, there's like a knot in your She says, "Never mind, just lie there and let me take care of this." And she does, and then she starts working on my neck, and then she lifts the covers, my feet, and I didn't take my socks off. Because I didn't know if I should or not. I'm embarrassed about my feet, I guess. I've never realized this, but I have foot embarrassment. There's nothing wrong with my feet. It's just that if I take my socks off, I feel like I'm exposing too much. It's like I could stand there totally naked. But if my socks are on, I'm good. It's okay. But if my socks are removed, hey, I'm defenseless now. So she says, did you mean to keep your socks on? And I said, I don't know. I don't know who you are. She says, would you like me to massage your foot? And I said, yes. And she removed my socks, the foot massage was incredible. It's my God. Here's the order of wonderful things. Eating a really good meal. Okay. Next, up the chain would be a foot massage. That was so nice. And the top of the chain would be reaching orgasm. It's pretty much it. It's pretty much the only three things that are going for me. So, and I figure all I'm going to get in this place is the foot massage. That's as far as we're going to go here. It's very, very comfortable. Then I start thinking, see, I have an overactive mind, as I've said before, which is probably the onslaught of an overactive bladder. I don't have that yet, but I know that's probably coming because everything else on me is overactive. I'm very laid back, but inside, I'm overactive. Underactive on the outside, overactive on the inside. I'm like an M&M. I'm like a Freudian M&M. So in my mind, I'm thinking, well, what if she was like an extremely attractive woman who was just physically sensational? What would happen? And then I'm thinking to myself, and it's the same reaction I would get if I was at somebody's home for a party and I went to their bathroom. And I went to their bathroom and I flushed a toilet and the toilet started backing up and was just about to flow over. It was that kind of embarrassment. Like, oh no, what would I do? What will I do? Oh my God. Oh my God. It was that kind of thing where all of a sudden I created in my mind, what if this massage therapist overreacted me in her beauty and I got some type of an erection? What would happen? Because this is the point in the massage when she says to me, okay, turn over on your back. Now she's going to massage probably the top of my shoulders and the top of my legs and my arms. That's why I'm laying on my back. But what if I had gotten an erection? How could I hide this? What would I do? And then I remember that, oh my God, I think you're supposed to think about baseball. Because baseball, for me especially, there's nothing orgasmic about baseball whatsoever. Why do people choose baseball as the thing to think about in order to get rid of an erection immediately? And then I realized it's because baseball kind of sucks. It's kind of the most unromantic game in the world. You got nine guys standing there dressed in their pajamas, playing with their crotch and spitting on the ground. There's nothing sexy about any of that. Nothing. Even the crowd is not sexy. They're shoving popcorn and hot dogs into their face, dripping beer all over their shirt, sitting there in a mound of filth, cursing at each other, sweating on cement seats. There's nothing sexual about a baseball game at all, except for women. It might be a little sexy to you to see a guy at home plate holding a bat, but even then, I can't imagine that being erotic in any sense of the word. So I think that's why people think about baseball when they want to lessen their libido. Lumbata. Anyway, my massage is over. I have no massages. My contract has run out, and I shall be getting no more massages. But now I'm kind of, I think I'm missing it, but I'm just wondering, is there anything wrong with getting an hour massage? Am I to feel guilty because there are starving children in Africa who don't ever get massages? They could. they could have their friends or somebody massage their back for free. I mean, you could get a massage if you're a starving child in Africa. So I don't really think that should stop me. I did enjoy it. It was nice. It was relaxing, like meditation. It was just really nice.
Think of the fact that the moon looks a lot closer than it normally is, and that maybe the Mayans were right, and this is pretty much it. But for now, as the warmth of the river overtakes you, and you calmly float downstream, not at all thinking about the potential of a waterfall at the end of the stream, over which you could plummet and fall to your death on jagged rocks below. You're just calm, at one with the flow, moving softly through the universe, even as the universe continues to simply ignore you and your constant pathetic cries for help in a life that's gone terribly, terribly wrong. And now we're coming to the end of the meditation. You want to rise up out of the river and not at all be concerned about the fact that you are buck naked and that there are natives along the riverbank who are pointing and laughing.
All right. Claire McIntosh joins us now. She's the author of I See You. I See You. It's a great book. Hi, Claire. How are you?
Hi, Ron. I'm great. Thanks so much for doing this.
It's a pleasure. Actually, I'm kind of excited to talk to you because I've actually gotten quite far into the book and I can't put the thing down, but I have to talk to you, so I have to put it down for a little while.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yes. It's a novel called I See You. Claire is a New York Times bestselling author of I Let You Go, the previous work. This is very involving, and I'll tell you why. Because in this day and age of paranoia by the government, people, that kind of thing, this is in the back of everybody's mind as to, like, how private am I and what I do in my life. This is just simply a person, a lady, who feels like something's not right, even though she goes about her daily life. Someone's watching, and this is... I think everybody can connect to this in a way.
Well, I certainly hope so, because that's absolutely what I set out to do. So I love reading all sorts of books, and it's really exciting to read books about people with special powers and special agents, spies. But actually what I love to read is about ordinary people, people whose shoes I can imagine I'm walking in. And so that's exactly who Zoe is. She is someone that we can all relate to, because what's interesting to me is how strong people are, ordinary people, mm-hmm. when they're put in extraordinary situations. There was something that I read a few months ago that said women are like tea bags. You only discover how strong they are when you put them in hot water. Mm. And so that's what I like to do with my characters. So I put Zoe Walker in really, really hot water, and she steps up to the plate and does a pretty good job in getting out of it.
Yeah, you kind of grabbed me at the beginning of the book when you set up the scenario where you just go through your normal everyday life, going to work, getting on the train or the tube, as you call it, and not thinking twice about anything, but you are out in public, and all of a sudden the realization comes to you that something's afoot. But it's just grabbed out of your everyday routine. That's the weird part.
Yeah, and we just do this without thinking, don't we? I've thought a lot about routine ever since I started writing this book, and it really does creep into everybody's life, because although this particular book focuses on commuters, so it's about all these people, they're all in London, they do the same journey every day. Actually, I don't commute, but I do the school run, exactly the same route every single day. When I walk the dog, I take the same path.
Right.
When I go for a run, I take the same path. I even stop to stretch or get my breath back at exactly the same part on that trip. And so if you do that all the time, it really does present a risk. But for us, routine feels really comforting because it's familiar. The more you do something, the safer you feel.
Right.
And yet, paradoxically, the more danger you're presenting yourself to.
Yeah. See, interestingly enough, everybody else has been commenting and writing about the internet, how you're watched on the internet and nothing you do there is private, and you go on and you do a little Facebook and check your emails and you figure that's just routine for me. But it's all focused on that, and you've focused it on just routine everyday life, which makes it a thriller. It makes it a thriller.
Good old-fashioned stalking. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe we're so focused, we're so looking in one direction that we've got complacent.
Yes.
About just, you know, the fear of being followed. And of course, when the two collide, when a little bit of online information is matched with real life following, real life stalking, then you've got a really big problem.
I get upset just when a telemarketer calls my house. I can imagine
it's very intrusive, isn't it? I hate that.
Yeah, I do too. I don't understand why you can't stop that, and there are laws against it, but that's on another subject matter. Probably probably your next book, as a matter of fact.
The Telemarketer. It's a brilliant title.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. So, like, I think I'm going to share in this one. Do I get, like, a percentage?
We'll see.
We'll see.
I'll have my people talk to your people.
Oh, that means no. That means no way. I get that. Okay. So, you're a very prolific writer. You've been doing this for a while. What did you do before you were a writer?
I was a police officer.
So a little insight involved here.
It's cheating, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I was a police officer for 12 years. I did lots of different jobs in the police. I was in uniform as a response officer, going around in cars with blue lights flashing. I was a community officer. I worked in custody. I was a public order commander, so dealing with big demonstrations, riots, that sort of thing. And I was also, one of my jobs was in charge of closed circuit television cameras, which feature a little bit in this book. And I was really struck by how it's a great example of technology that is used both for good and bad. And so we all know, you know, the whole sort of Big Brother paranoia about cameras and being watched. And of course, they can be used for bad things. But I've also, you know, I saw my team of CCTV camera operators find missing children, stop people from being attacked, solve drug rings. And so there's all sorts of crime that can be solved. And in the UK, we have so many cameras.
You're
I don't think
over,
you guys have nearly as many.
No, you've got them on every corner. You've got them just about every corner, don't you?
You can't move, really, certainly in a city without being on camera.
Yeah.
And so that was a really interesting area for me to explore.
Interesting. Hey, I say if you got nothing to hide, put me on camera. I don't care. Not in my home.
That's my theory, too.
Yeah, that's fine. And of course, these days with terrorism, this is almost becoming part of, you know, this is the way it is on top of that.
Yeah.
Boy, I remember, I don't know how old you are, but I remember when I was a kid, they always warned against this Big Brother thing before, you know, that was even big, and everybody thought, yeah, it's science fiction. Wow, that wasn't science fiction.
No, God, no, absolutely.
It did change our society. Okay, it's called I See You. It's available everywhere. I better hope it is. All right.
I think it is.
Well, of course it is. Okay. And how do we follow Claire McIntosh? And that didn't sound right. That did not sound right. You know what I mean.
Do you know what? I actually love being followed online by nice people. So if you are a stalker, don't come and follow
me.
But if you're a nice person, then look me up on Twitter or Facebook. You can just search Claire McIntosh. You'll find me and come chat about books.
Wonderful. The book is I See You. It's recommended. Go pick it up. And I don't want to hear any arguments about that. Thank you, Claire.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. Claire McIntosh, she's delightful. I love the way she says Twitter. I can follow me on Twitter. Oh, it's Claire. So cool. We're out of time for today. I'll be back with you again during the next weekday that comes up. Until then, I wish you peace.